justice. Another slice of Celtic history from a Celtic wiki. Amidst the hysteria of the past week, you'd be forgiven for believing that Wednesday, March 2nd, 2011 was a uniquely shameful day in Scottish football history. It is, we are told, a day when the reputation of an entire nation was tarnished by the actions of two football clubs. The reality is quite different. Celtic's Scottish Cup victory over Rangers was unquestionably marred by incidents which were totally unacceptable. But most supporters wouldn't have to dig too deep into their memory banks to uncover games which at the very least were equally unsavoury and controversial. Indeed, for the most part, the Celtic support should feel nothing but pride in the way their team reacted to the premeditated and brutish negativity of opponents who finished the game wildly out of control. But if these events prove anything, it is that justice is often the first casualty in the frenzied aftermath of so-called old firm shame games. On those occasions when Celtic have been responsible for these type of incidents, the club has rightly been held solely responsible. Yet on the frequent occasions when Rangers are the sole instigators of trouble, the matter suddenly develops into an old firm issue. Indeed, in Scotland, there appears to be a perverse unwritten rule which states that Rangers and their players can never be held solely accountable for their shameful antics. This is evident in the fact that the disgraceful behaviour of the Ibrox men a week ago has, in the space of just a few days, been spun so ferociously that we are now being told that the blame for Rangers' shocking loss of discipline must rest firmly on the shoulders of the Celtic manager. It is an absurd state of affairs. However, when you look it back at Celtic history, you begin to feel foolish for ever thinking justice was possible in Scottish football. At the start of season 1949-50, Celtic and Rangers were set to play each other four times in 41 days. Between August the 13th and September the 24th, the Hoops would face the Ibrox team twice in the League Cup, as well as in the Glasgow Cup and the League. Rangers were unquestionably the dominant Glasgow side at this time, as Celtic struggled to climb out of their wartime slump. The arrival of respected veteran coach Jimmy Hogan and the charismatic talent of Belfast boy Charlie Tully had, however, given the Parkhead support cause for optimism. And in the late summer of 1949, Celtic fans had renewed hope that their team could begin again to challenge for honours. That hope was fuelled further on August the 13th, when the Celts defeated Rangers 3-2 in a League Cup sectional tie at Celtic Park. Consequently, the boys' support travelled to Govan for a return game on August the 27th in good spirits. Celtic started the match impressively, and only the crossbar preventing the visitors taking the lead on 20 minutes. Soon afterwards, the Hoops pressed forward again, but with Charlie Tully in keen pursuit, Rangers defender Sammy Cox was able to successfully usher the ball back to the safety of keeper Bobby Brown. Brown then launched the ball upfield, and as he did, Cox turned to face Tully. To the shock of a watching 95,000 crowd, the Rangers defender viciously kicked the Celtic man in the groin. Tully immediately collapsed in agony. The assault on the Hoop star, committed directly in front of the Celtic support, had been as blatant as it was brutal. Yet, with the visiting fans howling for a penalty, referee A.B. Gebbie amazingly waved play on. Stunned by the officials' inaction, a justified sense of outrage among the visiting support quickly turned to violence. Bottles and other missiles rained down onto the pitch. Fighting erupted on the packed terracing, and hundreds of fans rushed onto the track in search of safety. Police reinforcements and medics swiftly arrived on the scene as the situation threatened to explode into a full-scale riot. A relative calmness would eventually be restored, but this outbreak of violence meant it was inevitable that Celtic would be reprimanded. But while the behaviour of some Hoops fans was undoubtedly shameful. Their actions were no more reprehensible or thuggish than those of Sammy Cotts. His despicable attack on Tully was totally unprovoked. It was a calculated action, wary of a sending off and a lengthy ban. Yet it appeared that the only people in the stadium not to witness this assault were the match officials. While some press reports speculated as to whether the referee was unsighted, there was unanimous condemnation of Cox. The SFA's Referees Committee launched an inquiry into the incident, and among their recommendations was a ban on the sale of bottled refreshments at derby clashes and the potential appointment of a referee from another British FA for future Celtic Rangers games. This call to consider using non-Scottish referees for games with Rangers would have greatly pleased the Celtic hierarchy, who had regularly expressed concern at the performance of local officials in these matches. But while that recommendation would be to Celtic's satisfaction, there would be a sting in the report's tail. Against virtually all evidence concerning the event, the committee decided to proportion equal blame on both Tully and Cox. Indeed, they somehow concluded that the victim be severely reprimanded alongside his attacker. Celtic made it perfectly clear they would strongly oppose any suggestion that Tully was in any way responsible for the rowdiness that followed his assault. However, before the referees committee went before the full SFA council, there was another two Celtic and Rangers clashes to negotiate. On September the 13th, both sides met again in the Glasgow Cup semi-final at Celtic Park. With both teams pre-warned about their behaviour, the match was petering out to a relatively uneventful draw. But with just minutes remaining, referee W. Davidson awarded the visitors a controversial free kick after ruling that Celtic fullback Roy Milne had handled the ball some 35 yards from goal. It was another blatant mistake, and several Celtic defenders rushed to the ref to protest. As they pleaded their case, Rangers took a quick free kick and slipped the ball to forward George Finlay. Referee Davidson briefly turned around from the protesting Celts just in time to see Finlay place the ball into the net. Without hesitation, and to the disbelief of every Celtic player and supporter, Davidson awarded the goal. It was a staggering decision. Not only had Davidson not signalled for the kick to be taken, the referee also had his back to play right up to the final moment. Naturally, he could not have seen that the free kick was taken from the wrong place and with the ball moving. Contemporary press reports also suggested Finlay was standing in an offside position when he received the pass. The Celtic support watched in disbelief as this latest injustice unfolded before them. There was no violence, just a stunned bewilderment at what they were witnessing. Some Rangers players seemed hugely embarrassed by the goal, and there was unusually very little celebration. The game would be held up for almost 10 minutes, as a few players, encouraged by some fans in the crowd, urged their Celtic teammates to walk off the field. The game would eventually continue, but the referee would blow for time early, as furious and frustrated Celtic players began to dangerously lunge into challenges. Against this backdrop, Celtic would plead with the football authorities to postpone the league clash at Ibrox on September the 24th. Their appeal was dismissed, and Rangers would run out 4-0 winners against the timid Hoops side, who had been instructed by Sir Robert Kelly to avoid any physical challenges. Another bitter defeat would come 4 days later, at the meeting of the SFA Council. As the Council considered the recommendations of the report into the earlier trouble at Ibrox, it was clear that the Referees Committee was basing their proposed punishment on contradictory statements from the referee. The official stated that he had not seen the incident, yet paradoxically, he then claimed that he thought Cox's kick had been accidental and that Tully had play-acted to exaggerate the circumstances. Charlie was an undoubted master of a wind-up. But what he wasn't was a play-actor. And throughout his career, he would endure countless robust challenges from tough tackling defenders without ever feeling the need to feign injury. Evidence previously provided by countless neutral sources in the press made the referee's letter claim utterly ridiculous. On arguing Celtic's case, Bob Kelly keenly highlighted the obvious inconsistencies presented by the committee. It was to no avail. The full recommendations were passed, and it was now the SFA's turn to give Charlie Tully a kicking. These injustices were enough to encourage an angry and disillusioned minority among the Hoop support to urge the club to follow the example of their Irish cousins, Belfast Celtic, and call it a day. The Irish club, ironically the former home of Charlie Tully, had recently disbanded, no longer prepared to put up with being treated as second-class citizens and being subjected to violence and intimidation. Thankfully, the custodians of the Glasgow Celtic would not heed such desperate, if well-intended, advice. During the next 60 years, they would of course suffer many more injustices at the hands of referees and the SFA, but there is no chance of Celtic being bullied out of existence. Today the club and its support will stand together against the establishment and their tools in the media. Celtic in 2011 will not settle for anything less than the equality which is their right. There are some in Scottish society who still think we should know our place. Sadly for them, as a Celtic chairman might say, those days are gone.